Rich Kimble, Kerry Haskell here, and Bruce Pratt on board for this week's Sports Lit 101. And look, I'm going to love the book because the author's got my name, and that's a beautiful thing. Tell me more.
Well, it's called Legends Never Die. It's by Richard Ian Kimble. It's from our friends at Syracuse Press, and the subtitle is Athletes and Their Afterlives in Modern America. I think a lot of people at some time in high school or sometime in college probably read A.E. Housman's poem, which I can never read without losing it, To an Athlete Dying Young. And this book might make the case that Lou Gehrig truly was the luckiest man alive, because Lou Gehrig, as an American icon, was never torn apart. He didn't live long enough to become the old fat guy in the wheelchair. And it takes us through the lines. This is a book that if you're starting already to think about the holiday season coming up, you have a sports fan on your list, is really a good book to get because it's very well written. It's not real long. It's well researched, but it doesn't read like an academic book. It has none of that college professor garbage that I'm forced to read very often. But it starts out with Lou Gehrig, a meditation on the mortality of American athletes, and that becomes sort of the leitmotif. The next one goes on to the story about George Gipp, the Gipper, and how Ronald Reagan became the Gipper, and how Ronald Reagan probably even thought he was the Gipp. But also it demystifies a lot about George Gipp, who was really sort of a jerk, didn't like to play defense. Once said to Newt Rockne, who accused him of not playing well at halftime, he goes, "Newt, a rock, you don't think I want to win this game? I got 400 of my own money on it." I mean, he was an inveterate gambler. But it talks about how Notre Dame has embraced this, and they know it's phony, sort of the whole George Gipp thing, that the speech was never really what it turned out to be in the movies. And then it moves on to what to me was the most fascinating, a chapter called Only Cowgirls Get the Blues. In 1929, Bonnie McCarroll was a bona fide rodeo star, and she and her husband Frank toured all around the country. And rodeo was huge everywhere. I mean, Madison Square Garden had a big rodeo in Detroit, along with the places you would normally think in the West and the Midwest and the like. And she at the Pendleton Rodeo was killed when she was forced to ride what they call, she wanted to ride slick, which meant that the way we see bronc riders ride now with their spurs and the stirrups not tied together under the horse. Women were forced at the Pendleton to do that, and it resulted in her dying. And it resulted in the end of women in bronc and bull riding. And it was really, really not a problem before that. I mean, there was no opposition to it. Maybe it's that sort of Western libertarian kind of thought. And then it talks about her life and how it was banned after that, and how 60 years later, Lane Frost, who was a 25-year-old guy, the PBR star, got killed, and suddenly he became Jesus. I mean, you know, they talked about how it was a holy mission, and this is what real men do, and this is a price you might have to pay. And it was really interesting the way that Kimball looked at this. You know, we've had talked so much recently about how physical education advocates in the 20s and 30s didn't want women playing sports. There was none of that. Nobody was objecting to this. And it really goes on to talk about how you know, Lane Frost has been, you know, is now this sort of god on earth who's no longer here, and how his family have a website and keep that memory alive. Yet Bonnie McCarroll, who was probably as great as he was at her part of the profession, has just been lost to history. Then a really interesting one, the Emile Griffith Benny Perrette fight, where Benny apparently uttered a number of gay slurs at Griffith, who was indeed bisexual. And big question as to whether Ruby Goldstein, the referee, allowed Griffith to pound Perrette and kill him, essentially by sort of saying, well, you know, when you're the champion, you get more chances to come back. It's a really fascinating story, and it's scholarship I hadn't seen. And one a lot of people will know is the sort of the Dale Earnhardt myth, how the intimidator, you know, who says he'd bump his own kid, is considered sort of a bad guy, villain, race driver, and then as soon as he dies, he again becomes sort of deified. And they never fault the athletes for this. And I need to make that clear. This is what the media and the press and their fans have done. The final chapter is Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, and Ted Williams. And looking at all three of them and the way they became heroes, and how for DiMaggio and Mantle, it's when they were playing. How when Williams was playing, the media didn't like him. In fact, when he was cryogenically frozen, Rick Riley said, well, that makes him only a few degrees warmer than he was with the press. They were, you know, but it really takes a look at America's need to do these things, to take people and sort of make them live forever as gods and immortals, when all they've done has been good athletes. And a lot of them didn't want that. It talked about how Mantle was just really didn't want to be that public hero for the longest time. It was only when he was near death that he realized how important he was to a lot of kids and people, and how much he'd let him down. And Williams, I think, at the very end, the same way, you know, I probably should have been nicer to you guys. But it's a really fun book to read. And it really, it's only about, and Travis Vogan, a number of people we've had on, Maureen Smith, blurb the book. And everything they had to say about it is true. You wouldn't have to be a great sports fan. You wouldn't have to be a great sociology fan. But this is a book that belongs on your bookshelf if you're a fan of either of those. So, Richard Ian Kimball, Legends Never Die, Athletes and Their Afterlife in Modern America. Got a great picture of Joe DiMaggio on the front cover. And researched, fun, really well written, really easy to read. Go out and get it. Syracuse Press.
And don't we do that with anybody famous that dies before their time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's think about Tom Petty. I mean, he was only 68 years old and he
66.
Died.
66.
Yes, 6 years old and he died. He's my age, right? And I think of him as one of the really great songwriters who was able to both be popular and be brilliant. And a lot of popular music isn't brilliant, and a lot of brilliant music isn't popular. I mean, I think he was really good with a lot of it. He could cross that over. And not with all of his songs, but a lot of it. But wait to see what he's going to be like, Dwayne Allman now. All those Florida guys are going to be in some pantheon in heaven. And if they had died at 25, we react one way.
Oh, yeah.
If they die at 66, it's still young, but we react
but,
another.
But look at James Dean, Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, Marilyn Monroe
John
and Elvis.
John F. Kennedy, for that matter, who still turns up in the top 10 of the best presidents of all time.
And he was only there for a short period of time, and it's a hard argument to make,
it
man.
It sure is, but not that he wasn't a great president or couldn't have become one, but hard to do that in 3 years, but die young, you get a little couple of bumps on the register.
Oh, yeah, and they talk a lot about the Elvis and the Marilyn Monroe. Kimball talks a lot about that in here, and how Mantle was like Monroe and Elvis because they were dissolute at the end. You know, they'd worn themselves out, and how people can't believe you do that. I mean, they want you to forever be young, and that DiMaggio courted that as long as he could. He stayed in phenomenal shape. He always dressed to the T's, always had a big tan, because he knew that the minute people started to think of him as an old guy, then Joe DiMaggio stops being the brand he was.
Yeah. And he was perhaps more conscious than any of them about the image of quote-unquote Joe DiMaggio.
Oh, absolutely. And it turns out if you were a friend of his and in any way he thought you were stealing his limelight, he'd do you in. He would not go to events with his brother Dom because he didn't want it to be about the DiMaggios. He wanted it to be about Joe DiMaggio. You know, a lot of stuff in here, I think we all sort of inherently know, but the way it's articulated in this book is really, really outstanding. I mean, I realize I'm raving about it, but I really do feel that good about it. It's a really fine book.
I think of the story about when DiMaggio first heard Simon Garfunkel's Mrs. Robinson, and he was mad.
Yeah.
What does this mean? Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? I'm gone anywhere.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? And Simon had to explain to him what he was talking about, what the intent was, but for a while, DiMaggio was a little ticked off at the whole idea.
Well, yeah, and when he was announced as the next Babe Ruth, he was happy with that. And when Mickey Mantle was announced as the next Joe DiMaggio, yeah, he wasn't really happy about that. And there's no doubt that had Mantle been healthy, he would have numbers. I don't think even today they would be spectacular. It's not that they were bad. You know, with 500 plus home runs and all that.
Back when that meant something.
Yeah, when it meant something. But and it's interesting, and the stuff about Emil Griffith and Bernie Perret is really fascinating. It was a lot about that I did not know.
Book is called Legends Never Die, and I hardly endorse any book written by a guy named Richard Kimball.
That's, and we will be having Richard on. We will be having Rich on as a guest in the next few weeks. And we're just lining that up now with Syracuse Press.
Very meta. My day rolls around.